Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Korean Alexis here, and I'm guest hosting on today's Cooligans. We talk about the catastrophe that is Manchester United.
Good vibes, John, coming through. We're also going to be joined. We had a conversation at MLS Media Day with Taylor Twellman of MLS Season Pass. So we talk about the upcoming MLS season, and we take a look back a little bit at what happened last season. Also, a bunch of other Premier League matches. Everton defeat Tottenham. A lot of concerns for Tottenham, but no concerns for Everton. You love to see it. Everybody's directing all the negative energy at Spurs. And also, we'll talk about the title race, Arsenal, and Tyler Adams thriving at Bournemouth. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. Oh boy, we got a new president, John Shin. What are we doing?
Woo, let's go.
It is inauguration day, and it's I think people will prefer to be watching the Cooligans instead of watching the inauguration. At least our audience, I'm assuming. I don't know exactly what demos we hit necessarily, but I don't imagine the demo that I think is a big fan of the current president may not be a fan of a Dominican and a Korean doing a soccer podcast. that's my guess, but I could be wrong. I'm just, we're not here to judge, but we shall see. Good vibes, John, joining me on the Cooligans. John, what's up, man? How are you doing?
Christian, I hope you're doing great. I'm just going to say this really off the top, okay?
Yeah, go for it.
The last time I was on the Cooligans podcast, mm-hmm. I came in with the energy. I'm sitting between two comedians. I'm going to try and keep up. I'm going to try and be funny. I watched that back. I must have maybe pinched myself, maybe like swore at myself a couple of times. I was not funny at all.
Really? Okay. That's all right. That's this is the thing as a comic. One thing that I enjoy, I think when I'm performing, the audience is watching me, and I am the show for the crowd, but for the performer, the audience is entertaining me. You know what I mean? Their smiles, their laughter, their enjoyment of what I'm doing, their reactions to what I'm bringing to the table is the entertainment for me. So that's why it's also fun for me. And that's exactly what I felt. You brought the good vibes, the energy. You were receptive to our jokes. So to me, that is a person with a sense of humor, with good energy, a good audience member. Now, if you are putting the pressure on yourself of like, I'm on a comedy podcast and I'm supposed to be funny as well, that is challenging. And you don't need to go in with that expectation. You just need to go, I'm here to have a good time. And that's what I expect here. I think if you get self-conscious about like being funny, then it gets a little nervy. So I wouldn't recommend it.
It wasn't even like that, Christian. It was more like, I thought I was a funny guy. Like, I was like, yo, I'm hanging. You know what I mean? I'm pulling up.
Okay.
I'm hanging.
Got it.
Realized, oh, wait, no, I'm not hanging. Actually, John, just shut up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm in a room with people that have been professionally funny for 15 years. So yeah, I've been there. And I know what it's like, but
it's like the perfect analogy of like a Sunday league baller just like showing up to like a League One game or a championship game and realize, oh man, this is no, never mind.
I love that, but you know what? That boosts my confidence because you've interviewed a lot of footballers and as have I, and there's a little bit of like, hey, you're in my arena now, like show some respect. If I'm on the pitch and we're taking free kicks or whatever. Hey, I'm gonna follow your lead. Uh-huh. But when we're here, hey, the yuck yucks, I'm the mayor of Yuck Yuck Town. So show some respect.
All right, I'm gonna show some respect. I'm gonna follow.
No doubt. Thank you. Good vibes, John. John is co-hosting with me. Alexis is still out of town, but we have a lot to discuss today. So everybody, welcome to the Cooligans podcast. My name is Christian Polanco. I'm joined by the one and only Good Vibes, John. Make sure, if you're a Manchester United fan, you already know him, but make sure you go follow Good Vibes, John. If you don't even care about Manchester United, you just want the good vibes, that's who brings it to the table. It's in the name, bro. I'm just like, I just love that your Korean parents were like, his first name is going to be Good Vibes. I'm like, yo, how did they know? This is great. So we have a lot to go over today. We're also we're obviously going to be talking a lot of Premier League, a lot of Manchester United, but we recorded an interview with Taylor Twellman at MLS Media Day. So the MLS season is coming up real soon, and just about a month away. So the next few weeks, we're going to be hearing from a lot of pundits. We already had the Dax McCarty interview from 2 weeks ago. But we have a bunch of players that are going to be coming through, and a really, really fun interview. So Taylor Twellman, we did a poll on YouTube asking people, hey, what is the next interview you want to hear from MLS Media Day? And we had three players and Taylor Twellman. Taylor Twellman won the vote. I didn't know Taylor had the motion like that, but my man won it convincingly. Well, a landslide victory. So people want to hear from Taylor Twellman, and we had a great conversation with Taylor. So be on the lookout for that. All right, let's get right to it. Manchester United, the big game of the week. That we've been joking, we haven't come up with a name for this segment. The most important game, the big game. I say let's call it the Super Bowl. I don't know if that works, but we're trying to highlight how significant this game was, so that you will be part of the conversation when it comes to talking about the Premier League. And Manchester United against Brighton and Hove Albion, a game at Old Trafford where it's starting to. I mean, I don't even know exactly where to begin, but obviously this game was the scoreline was 3-1. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
Yep. Yeah.
And we'll get to the details of the game. But the Old Trafford, I've been to Old Trafford, right?
Okay.
An incredible experience. It was the first time I got to see like Cristiano Ronaldo play and all. Mm. And like, I'm like, all right, I don't love the guy, but it's like, it is him, right? So I got to see that. I was sitting. I was fairly close near the corner flag, and maybe, I don't know, maybe like 15 rows back. And I remember, when you're there, you can't not be a Manchester United fan. You know, I'm not a Manchester United fan, and I'm watching this game. So I have to like, hey, good shot, guys. I have to really act like I'm into it. Because there was a family next to me. Mm. A mom maybe in her 30s and a child that was probably like 9 or 10 years old. And you sort of go and you just sort of expect like, oh, the ladies at Old Trafford are going to be a little bit more demure, right? They're going to be a little bit more chill about this whole thing. And that's not the case. There was an intensity. There was swearing. The mom was swearing in front of her children. She was mad about she was mad at the ref and all this other stuff. So I take Old Trafford to be a intimidating place, as it should be, and it has been for a very, very long time. But the last few years, but especially this season, it has been concerning how poor Manchester United are playing at home. I mean, away is a different thing, but at home, you just sort of have higher expectations. To lose this game and to make the mistakes that they did, I mean, where I don't even know where you want to start, because I'm really getting worried. And not just you understand that there's a lot of institutional problems with United, but these performances at home are crazy.
Oh, no, it's insane. I mean, you said concerning. That is an understatement. This is absolute nightmare right now for Manchester United. Like, you're talking about the form at Old Trafford. You're talking about the performances. Manchester United, this is the lowest we've been from the perspective of position, but also the lowest we've been in terms of vibes, in terms of energy, in terms of just everything. And it is a really, really dark period for Manchester United fans. And I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point about Ruben Amorim, but... In what capacity would we have imagined since Sir Alex Ferguson's retirement, where we would have seen managers come and go, but managers now talk about us having the worst team or having the worst history, worst records? It is bad. It's really tough to like endure what's going on. Is it tactics? Is it shape? Is it formation? it's a plethora of issues, and we could sit here for like 2 hours talking about it, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the quotes from Ruben Abram. And this, you know, when he got there, I think Ruben Abram has the luxury of being a little bit more blunt and honest, because the last manager was tried to soften everything. No, it's not as bad as it seems. Ruben Amorim is like, hey, it is a nightmare. It is a 5-alarm fire. We have so many problems, so many issues. And people are like, they're allowing it because they know what he stepped into. And
right, exactly.
But that statement of him saying, this is maybe the worst team in Manchester United history, is a, you can't walk back from that. But he's allowed to say it to really highlight, like, hey, this is the job I have. But that statement, I guess my question is, how long is he allowed to talk like that before they start blaming him?
Great question. I would say probably for sure he can say whatever the hell he wants this season. He could come out and be like, this player's breath stinks. Oh, man, I'm sick of this guy. This guy doesn't know how to tie his shoelaces. You know what I'm saying? He can say whatever he wants, and he gets a pass this season for sure. Because right. United fans know that. I mean, I'm so sick of scrolling through the feed and seeing the same damn clip of Ralph Rangnick, Uncle Rang Rang, talking about how United, it ain't a cosmetic surgery, it's an open heart surgery. I'm sick of seeing the same clips over and over again, but it is true. Like, the issues are so bad, and Ruben Amorim has had to walk into this. And mind you, a lot of fans are already sort of forgetting. Ruben Amorim didn't want to come in right away. He wanted to see the season out at Sporting Portugal first before anything else. But United gave him the, hey, it's now or never. You know? Yeah. So he had to take, I mean, look, it's Manchester United. He's going to take the job, of course. So of course it's his decision as well. I'm not taking that responsibility away from him, but you have to also accept the fact that he's walking into an absolute disaster. The squad, a lot of people are saying, oh, some of these players are good enough, it's just maybe a formation issue and things like that, and that's maybe from the perspective of non-Manchester United fans. But if you are a Manchester United fan, you've been watching this week in, week out for the X amount of years we've been having to deal with all of this. This squad has been so poorly built that United have so much work cut out for them. And he can say what he likes. He can say these players, this is the worst team, because it is the worst team. We're talking about loaning out Antony, at 95 million euro pound player that we brought from Ajax. And all he's been doing is spinning, and he's just been not, you know, putting out results. And I wanted him to succeed. So I still want him to succeed so bad. But these are the type of transfers that we've been making, and it's so disheartening.
Yeah. I think my favorite part, though, is that we've sort of gotten so much incredible poetry out of these Manchester United failures. You know what I mean? You know, it's not cosmetic surgery. It's open heart. I'm like, yo, Rangnick,
I'm so sick of people writing bars after bars.
Bars, poetry. I'm like, I'm doing the snaps. I'm like, yo, I've never, this is modern day literature at its finest. This is incredible. It is pretty remarkable. But it's so odd to go from the game against Arsenal where, you know, Harry Maguire is now like, let's go, and the ups and the it's weird because the ups are like to beat City, and then to have, I mean, look, you could lose against Brighton. They're a good team, but the mistake from Onana that led to, I believe, what, the second or third goal, I don't remember. But it's things like that where there's Manchester United has games where the stock completely rises for a player, like where you're just like, oh, wow. Okay. All that criticism. Why were we criticizing Onana? That made no sense. Look at what he brings to the table. And then he makes a mistake like that at home, where it's like, it wasn't even that fast of a shot. It wasn't that even that great. Again, I'm not a goalkeeper. I'm not here necessarily to be like, I could have done better, but He is a Premier League goalkeeper that played in a Champions League final, 2 years ago. That is, it's wild to, from game to game, you, not even that you don't know who's going to show up, but that I think it's affecting the confidence of these players, because I don't think they know what the guy next to them is going to do on any given day.
Exactly. They're all at a point right now where their mental fortitude is slowly draining, that resilience that you need to compete. You were talking about the errors. It's so funny because Andre Nana, I back him so many times. He has clangers and he has a history of errors, right? I still back him nonetheless. But when you're doing things like stomping on the player's foot, whether it was intentional or not, before it led to the error, there's these moments of head loss. And, you know, you were talking about the performances against Arsenal and Liverpool. I sort of compare it to this, like survival instincts, for example. You know, if mommy or pops or if their child is under a car, in an instinct, survival instinct, parent instinct, whatever, they will lift that freaking car up right. to save their kid. It's that like snap. You just get that wind, you know, that extra. Mm-hmm. You can't rely on that. That's not stable. That's not healthy.
Right, right.
You know? And for that Liverpool-Arsenal game, that's where the came out because that survival instinct kicked in. But once that drops, that's the concern because then you're having to rely on your consistency. Ruben Amorim said, the game against Arsenal, the game against Liverpool, it was about desire. You putting up a fight. It's great. All right, desire is beautiful. We're talking about desire, all these fancy words. Great. But he said he was worried more about the game against Southampton because he was worried more about, okay, those are the games where it's like, you know, maybe form is slightly out the window because of the name and the meaning of the game. The Southamptons, the Brightons, respectfully, those are the games where you show more simplicity, more consistency. And United clearly can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, look, the game against Southampton where it looked like it was just another loss on the way. And if it's not for Amad Diallo to just get a hat trick in 12 minutes.
That game was so bad. It was so bad. Like
it's like... You can't even really celebrate the hat trick because it's like, what the hell happened for those first, 80 minutes?
It's like my hormones and my emotions are all over the place because I'm going through these ups and downs. Like I've been making match reviews where I'm singing Katy Perry's Hot and Cold. I'm shocked that I remember the lyrics for it because it's been so long.
Yeah,
but that's what I'm doing. Like we're hot and we're cold. We're yes and yeah. I'm not gonna save you the lyrics, but that's we're going up and down, back and forth.
Feel free, bro. I'm not gonna stop you from expressing yourself. All right, because
so
dude,
bad.
Look, I use the word concerning to probably be a little bit polite, but the it's frustrating because even like the good moments, they're difficult to celebrate because they're mired in so much mediocrity. And this is, where are they right now? They're in 13th place, and there's just something about the institution of Manchester United that is just like, look, they spend too much money. They have too many resources to be in this situation, and it gets to a point where, you know, the clubs, quote unquote, beneath them, see what they have, and of course they would be like, we would take any chance to be a club like Manchester United. We would take it. The interest, the attention, the sponsorship money, all that stuff, and they sort of squander it. And it's, I mean, when you look at the everything going on this season with like firing Sir Alex Ferguson from being like an ambassador with the club and like stewards getting a pay cut. And it's just like, bro, this just seems like such a fundamental, like they're running the business wrong.
But you see, but this is what I've always been afraid of because it's almost kind of in some ways a corporatization of what's going on at Man United. Yeah. It feels very much like a company of sorts, and you kind of lose the humanity elements of running a club when you behave that way. But on one hand, you look at the decision makings of Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos because they've come in and realized there is an absolute. This is just. We're a sinking ship right now and they need to put patches on, but they need to put like metal patches and they got band-aids to work with. You know what I'm saying? Like it's really bad. And I understand the frustration and I understand that they have to make drastic measures because you have to, but on one hand, they're doing these things. But on the other hand, they're making these awful decisions. I mean, United fans were so furious that they sacked Dan Ashworth. They went through hell and back fighting with Newcastle, bringing him, paying them extra money, severance money, all this stuff, bringing him, right? That money, that little severance extra payment that they paid, and then to pay him off, to pay him out of his contract, that could have saved all those jobs that they had to lay off all those people. They could have paid a lot of these employees who always get those free bus trips to go watch the FA Cup final down to Wembley. They stopped doing that. So these are the things where United fans are like, okay, look, we're backing you, but please work with us here, because what are you doing?
Right, right. It's just like, you know, being upset with like, you're a local politician, you know, the local comptroller. Like, bro, what are you doing with the money? This ain't how you do it. I mean, you know, we got no traffic lights. Why are you buying a boat? I mean, how about Marcus Rashford? He hasn't been in the squad in already, what, it's almost 2 months now. As a fan, like, is it simply like we got to back the manager, or is this just like, is he better off for himself and for the club that they part ways?
Christian, I thought, you know, when I came onto this podcast, I thought we agreed to discuss our shared love of antiquing, our shared love of pottery making. I thought we were going to talk about that. We're talking about Marcus Rashford? All right, let's do it. Okay. Well, look, let's. Okay, Marcus Rashford. Okay.
Some would say he's an antique of some sorts.
Oh, I'm not going there. That's not, this is where. That's Alexis. That's where you and Alexis. That's not me. No.
You know, you can share your perspective. All good.
Yeah, no, look, Marcus Rashford, he's somebody that I feel like has had it worse than a lot of other players. I'm going to be 100% real. The abuse that he's faced, the criticism, the media scrutiny, and the attention, it's elevated. That's. Without debate, I will fight with you to the grave on that point. I feel so bad for some of the things he's had to endure. But on certain hands, while you do feel bad for him and you do back him more because of those reasons, you also think about the decisions that he makes or the lack of certain decisions. So maybe being backed by the wrong sort of people, having the wrong people around him, the inner circle, what many people have talked about that in the past as well. I think we've gotten to a point where it's probably best for both parties if Marcus Rashford leaves. If he plays right now, it doesn't help. His head's not in the right space, I mean, from what we can see at least.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not going to come on at this point and produce a performance. There was a game, I can't remember which game it was, where he was on the bench, United needed some sort of, you know, attacking threat, and we couldn't bring him on. And people were saying, why didn't Ruben bring on Marcus Rashford? United fans need to accept the fact that Ruben Amorim, at this moment, he's trying to instate that level of respect or sort of demand. He's trying to change the culture by bringing on Marcus Rashford in this game, despite what's been going on, is going to be very reductive. It's going to pull everything away from what he's been slowly trying to build in the middle of this chaos. At this point, it's best for both parties if we moved on. I think the damage is done. It's like a couple that, you know, said some really tough things, you know, to each other. It's better if you just part ways at that point. It's I don't think it's healthy for him to stay, and I don't think it's healthy for United to keep
That's
him.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, the reports I've seen are, you know, possibly AC Milan, but that seems less likely now for him to end up there. But Dortmund is like the name that also came up that seems kind of interesting. And it'd be interesting to see him in Bundesliga and then at Dortmund, a team that is also suffering through mediocrity right now. And they could use someone like that.
Yeah, and Nuristanian actually is hilarious because apparently, I've never heard this word. And Christian, you let me know. Apparently, Erik ten Hag is the shadow manager of Nuristanian. What I have never heard. Shadow manager. I'm learning so many new terms. United getting scored on in corners. I never knew what an Olympico was. Now there's a shadow manager. We have shadow striker, shadow manager. What the hell?
Wow. It sounds like you know when you're playing a video game and you defeat the boss and then like a shadow version of
phase two.
And you're like, oh, I thought I won the game, and it's like, yeah, you unlocked another level. This ain't fair. I mean, Sahin, speaking of shadow manager, he's gonna get sacked like a real manager because he is not playing.
Yeah,
Dortmund is awful right now, losing really, really big games against teams that they should be beating. Dude, I mean, look, we could go on forever about just the issues with Manchester United, but there's something about I think this loss, and I think it makes it worse that it's at home, and then, you know, the statements from Ruben Amorim after the game just are sounding off more bells than usual. Realistically, there's no. I don't think they're going to get relegated. It's they're better than that. But even that was another thing. He brought that up in a post-match conference where he's saying like it's not crazy if Manchester United do get relegated. And it really just shows the privilege and luxury that a Manchester United manager has I don't think it's happened in the past that in my memory. And I don't think it'll ever happen again. Like this, we're in a moment where like he can literally be blunt, he can be honest, and he's not going to lose his job. He's not going to piss anybody off. or you know, or his superiors, because he can just be completely transparent until he finally brings in his players. But bro, this is a I think where the last question I asked, where do you think they end up? I mean, I don't think they're gonna get relegated, but this is maybe like 12th or 13th. Is there any even hope in thinking that they can get higher than that?
I am always going to be the optimist, so I hope and pray that we will finish higher than 10th. I would be relieved if we finish 8th at this point. You know, it's just considering how poor we've been. But you know, just to end on that point about Ruben Amorim, you ever had that friend where it's like you guys go out drinking and he gets so drunk that he's just out and he's trying to sleep and like you need to wake his ass up so you can take the train, but he's been so annoying, so you like, you know, when you slap him like, wake up, you hit him a little extra harder, you know, yeah, just to kind of pay back, you know what I'm saying? That's where we're at right now. United have been sleeping, they're drunk sleeping, and Ruben Amorim is just slapping him awake, and he's slapping him a little bit harder with those conversations about relegation and all those things. It's a reality check, so that when they wake up, they have that hand mark, like, what the hell was going on?
What did I do to deserve this slap? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so and they wake up, and they're like, oh, shoot, maybe I did deserve the extra, you know? That's where we're at. So okay, if we finish 8th, I'll take it.
Okay, we shall see. I mean, it might be my club, Everton, and United fighting for that you know, important 17th place. We shall see who gets there. Oh, all right, let's get to our interview with Taylor Twellman. Like I mentioned earlier, the MLS season is coming up soon. Taylor Twellman is the main color, the lead color commentator, alongside you know, the announcer Jake Zivin, and we talk all things Major League Soccer, all things Messi, and how this you know, this season should shape up, especially after Inter Miami losing early in the playoffs. So here it is. Here's our conversation with Taylor Twellman.
The revolving door of stars continues. Exactly. This is, let's say, no, I'm talking about after this episode.
It's not this segment.
The voice you're hearing.
The door is currently broken.
Yeah. But that's why. It's jib guys. Actually, it's gaffers walking by trying to get to the construction yard.
But the just came out of the basement, actually. Yeah. It's a trap door right there.
The voice you're listening to is, I want to say, and I say this as a compliment, the loudest man in soccer. Absolutely. And that, for me, is an honor to say. Taylor Twellman, everybody.
What's up, boys?
Taylor,
what's going on, buddy?
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Okay.
No off season.
No, that's not what MLS is about.
When was the last time you actually had like a full on break?
I think when I was playing and then I got punched in the face by the goalie in my career. I was like, come on, I'm going to take 6 months off. I mean, listen, it's positive. It's great for the growth of the game and all that, but I wouldn't mind maybe a week longer before I see you chuckle.
It'd be nice. I want to go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's just, it's wild to be here at Media Day, and I just wanted to get your perspective of walking in this room and the Cooligans have their own space at MLS Media Day
and staff.
And the whole, I mean, I had to wait for you guys 10
that
minutes.
Is true.
Like, they were like, let's let him sweat out a little bit.
Okay,
our producer Carter came out to get us and he's like, oh, Taylor's in the room. And I go, we'll wait another 30 seconds.
Right. I was like, really?
Yeah. Make them think we're doing something important.
I knew they found cigarettes and tequila right when you guys left the room. What's the difference? It's amazing how far this Media Day has come.
Okay.
I was part of the first one that they came into this, and we all did it in New York City. It was 2008, 2009. Ben Olsen, Houston Dynamo coach, is going to remember this very fondly. And all we had was an office at the league office that they took all the furniture out except the couch, and we all took different photos.
That was
the couch. That was it.
That was Media Day.
Then we went to dinner, and we did like 3 or 4 interviews, and that was it.
Nice.
That's actually pretty cool if you're a player.
But I look at the pictures now, and I'm thinking, oh, dear Lord.
They got their finest Nokia phones.
Yeah.
To take
the I had a Palm Pilot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, sorry. That was right when the BlackBerry Messenger came out.
Yes. Yeah.
So you were scrolling on the side wheel. I had the Pearl joint. You couldn't mess with me. I was.
I know. I had to tape my thumb every time I played golf with that thing.
Not me. I was training for my honeymoon. Anyway, you might have to cut that part out. All right, we're live. Actually, speaking of how far we've come, I got to talk to you about this fever dream I had.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my God. I don't know if what I took before I went to bed to help me sleep. I had this dream. I pictured you in an ESPN basement with a TV behind you.
Drugs are bad.
And no
Danny.
One with a camera who I don't think anyone was behind. And you yelling about MLS for an hour trying to get people to commit to this show.
I love
Is
it.
This real? Did this really happen? What
oh,
was
that's
called?
Happened multiple times what? In my house by myself.
What's MLS Rewind? What was the name
MLS
of the show?
MLS Rewind.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened? Can we just talk about that?
Yeah.
How hard was it to try to get a major network commit to an MLS show?
I don't think anyone actually knows this, so good on you to ask the question. Everybody, we had four or five people do that after work. I drove down. Nobody got paid for that. And we wanted to prove a point on ESPN Plus that you would grow an audience, and we did.
Really?
We did.
It was a good show.
So you're talking about producers did this for
free.
Oh, no,
this was the producers that traveled to the game. The graphics people, the audio people, whatever we needed to conjure up to pull together stuff. There was no teleprompter. This was red lights on, Taylor, wing it. And we did it. And Alejandro Moreno would come in.
Yeah.
And I would call him and be like, Alejandro, when's your schedule? He'd be like, listen, I only got 20 minutes here. We'd like, come in for this. We dressed up. We did it. We just wanted to prove a point because this was pre-COVID.
Yeah.
That there's an audience there for strictly this league. And we did, and it was cool, and it was great, and it was a part of that. It was exhausting, and I think I'm forever grateful for the behind-the-scenes people at ESPN because they were doing 10-hour days, and then I'm asking them to throw three more hours on the days because let's do this highlight, yeah. Let's do that highlight. Yeah, I may be driving down 2 hours one way to come down, but it's a passion of mine. So to your point, yeah, dude, we were in the basement. We had
it
one...
was a basement. No, I said, bro, there ain't a window anywhere near this man.
Oh, no. Dude, there wasn't a bathroom. The bathroom was on the side. But to the point, it was kind of fun to say, no, we're going to do this and see it. And I give credit to ESPN for letting it get on air because there was really no content surveying, anything looking at it. They're like, let's
you know,
just
they
see.
Were staring at this file on a computer totally. Going, he ain't going to stop talking about it unless we air this thing on ESPN
exactly.
Plus.
But it was. I think it's important for people to know this. I spoke for everybody in that soccer department at ESPN. This wasn't, just Taylor. No way.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people. There still are a lot of people there that believe in this league, believe in this sport. And we just stole a camera, put it in the basement. We had the one screen behind us.
You had one TV. You were in a corner. Yeah. I remember there was one episode started with like you ruffling from behind the camera. That's why I was like, there might not be a cameraman. This might be you hidden play.
No, it was a button or someone right behind the camera that would also run the graphics that also would say, okay, here go the highlights.
Amazing. You had like paperwork in your hand.
Dude,
and then,
it was
like,
great. It was awesome.
We showed a highlight and you came back. You had no longer paperwork in your hand. I knew you probably threw it.
Totally.
I'm like, this is so haphazard, but I'm like, it's probably what's needed to get the buy-in. And I'm glad that you at least got that.
We did. Then COVID happened.
Yeah.
Right. And so that changed the whole, I think, look of TV, media,
everything.
The way ESPN looked at soccer, whatever it may be. But yeah, it's kind of one of those stories that I'll tell my kids about when they're old enough to figure out. And it was fun because it was just a passion, let alone, a money grab. There was no money involved.
Yeah, yeah
we did it.
It's wild how it's just like covering MLS feels like this weird guerrilla warfare type of thing where everybody has like dark paint under their eyes.
Yeah,
like
scars.
Yeah, yeah.
And great stories.
Great stories that we laugh about now.
We do because it's 30 years in and you're like, we did that?
Yeah.
So it must feel kind of nice to be at Apple and see how prominent Major League Soccer is being displayed, just compared to what it was in the past.
1080p, like the whole thing, dude.
Yeah, but it's even just like, we've spoken to so many people, Hercules Gomez or Sebastian Salazar, and everybody who has worked at ESPN, who has covered soccer, comes out of it just a little bit like, I really went through it. Like, just a little bit of...
You got to fight the fight.
Vietnam,
you
got to
fight the fight. But on the other hand, we wouldn't be here 30 years in if ESPN didn't believe in Major League Soccer and didn't stay with it. So we've got to be very careful to say, well, look, they didn't do SportsCenter highlights. They didn't do a baseball tonight. Okay. But look at what they did with the World Cup. Look at what they did with the U.S. men's national team and the women's national team. So we would not be sitting here 30 years into this league, if ESPN did not believe in it and stick to it,
that's
and
facts.
Stay with it,
I agree.
Long.
Yeah, I think what's important and what we've seen as far as like how to, I mean, it feels like sometimes ESPN is the the standard. Yep. We all have. If it's not on ESPN, it is not a legitimate sport in this league. But I think what tends to happen with, and I think it's all totally valid with like just fans getting louder, getting critical of the coverage that is as being delivered.
They're asking for more.
And we see it, I think, a lot with the WNBA, where like there's been a groundswell of like, hey, talk about this league. There's fascinating people, and then even the criticism of just like how, you know, Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are being pitted against each other, and it's all fairly like gross of how they're trying to deliver what this league is about. And I think again, MLS fans I think are starting to get louder and louder.
Oh no, it's about loud. That. It's definitely loud. Listen, we're at 30 teams. You could probably us three come if we spent 5 minutes on it. 16, 17 markets where if you did a 3-4 hour sports talk radio show strictly about Major League Soccer and that, you would have enough content for 5 days a week.
100%.
I don't think that was the case 10 years ago. I know it wasn't 15 years ago. So you hit the nail on the head. There's absolutely a hunger for just treat it the way you treat our NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball team, and we'll deliver and we'll argue with you. Here's how I know it. When I land in certain markets, the Uber driver will look at me and go, you know what? You were full of it when you were talking about a right back.
People, you land in the city and people are like, man, I don't like you.
Yo, right? Why'd you say that about my player?
Everyone, like my family hears that. They're like, oh, man. I'm like, guys, that is awesome.
Yeah.
One, that means they're listening to you.
Yeah.
And two, that means they care.
And you watch enough to have an opinion.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's what we do about all of our other sports. I grew up in St. Louis. We argued about the Cardinals and the Blues all the time.
Yeah.
Now we're doing it about St. Louis City. I show up in St. Louis City. Some St. Louis fans would say, I'm not from St. Louis anymore. Because they lost the sport in Kansas City, not me. And I just remind them of it.
Right.
But my point is, that's growth. That's great.
Huge.
And that's a huge sign of our 30. We got to get 30 markets to do it. You know me, I'm always trying to push the meter and push the ball further. But I do think you're right. I think there's about 16, 17 markets where if you did a strictly MLS radio show, you'd have buy-in, you'd have callers, you'd have sponsors, and you'd have real vigor to some of the opinions, which is really healthy for sports staff.
Yeah, there was a – remember in this was in 2017 or 18 when we went to Atlanta for – when we did the live show with Julian Gressel.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We did a radio show. What was that? I forgot the station.
Yeah,
92.9 the game?
The game. Big Hugh –
Big Hugh.
Who was an Eagle.
Hugh Douglas,
right?
Who, by the way, worked with yours truly at ESPN, made fun of me, and I couldn't really come back because he could stuff me in the locker in 2 seconds.
He's big guy.
But I said, he lost a bet with me something about other sports, okay?
Yeah.
And I said, and if I won, he had to watch a full soccer game with me.
Ah.
And after the game, no joke, he looked at me and said, dude, I can get into this real quick.
So, because we did that.
And it happened like that. And then Atlanta brought their culture and brought it all in. And he's texting me left and right going,
dude.
And I was like, where the hell have you been? This is what it is.
But we walk in. He's mad at us for something we said or something like that. I'm like,
well, yeah.
I'm right. Why are you?
Which is awesome.
It was, you know, it had especially Atlanta sports talk radio. Like, it had the same cadence, but just about soccer.
Yep.
And I was just like, yo, this, like, it almost sounds a little strange to the ear.
Well, this is where we've got to grow. Soccer fans, soccer media, whatever. Like, we can't be the protectors of something and 100%. Not allow.
No,
my biggest pet peeve at ESPN, and it was less about ESPN, it was the way soccer fans would make fun of some of my colleagues that didn't know the sport, but they treated it with the same energy. They treated it with the same respect. They misspoke. Now, one could argue, well, do 5 minutes of research and you could say it. On the other hand, the fact that they're just doing it is a sign of growth.
Absolutely.
Right? So instead of... when Gus Johnson did Champions League games and the hate that came his way, stop.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
We're trying to move forward.
Yeah, we're trying to grow it and grow it in a way that everyone's welcome. If we say inclusivity, well, then that includes Gus Johnson calling games.
Yeah.
I'm real good friends with Mike Tirico, Sean McDonough. I used to say to them all the time, you guys would call a good soccer game. You're just the best broadcasters.
Right.
Scott Van Pelt at the 18 World Cup, and he's going, we had no highlights at ESPN, so we did draw the World Cup, and I don't know if you guys saw it, but I would draw the highlights with crayons, and then we would do it. Honestly, it was the most fun I've ever had, and we had a blast.
What are the odds that you playing with crayons is the most fun you've ever had?
By the way, that World Cup, I drew probably the poop emoji every four games, right? And then just would chill it. But he dove in to the sport. Hands of all in, rolled the sleeves up, and he was all in. Stanford Steve. All of a sudden, and all it takes is 5 minutes, I think, of our brethren to have a little empathy and honestly just open it up and say, I'm telling you, you will buy in. You will find something that brings you in. I think Ted Lasso has helped a ton in having this conversation. And anyone that hates on Ted Lasso is ridiculous.
You don't have a soul.
Or a brain.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, a lot of people that have no idea about soccer, Ted Lasso resonated with them, and you can use it as a vehicle to do that. This is a long-winded way of saying, I do think we still have a way to go on growing this, and by being more open to say, the LSU college football fan, you want to come here a little more than once every 4 years and when the World Cup comes around? Come on in. Be yourself. Yeah. Be the fan you want to be. Figure out what you like, and then...
But we still
deal.
We still deal. Well, you saw the Al Michaels thing. Yep. Who was it? Was it
Kirk Herbstreit?
Who's on getting some heat for the last couple of weeks? But I don't know if you saw
this.
Al Michaels was talking about.
He had never. He called every sport but a soccer.
But a soccer game, and he goes, "Oh, I've called everything except soccer." And Kirk Herbstreit said, "Oh, good for you."
Yes.
And then everybody was like, "All right, Kirk.
Now you ready for this?" Because I texted Kirk. He said, "Good for you. You've called every sport other than soccer." It wasn't a dig at soccer.
Right.
I got mad. I got mad with him telling me
By the way, I may have been, maybe, and this is not because I know him, but like deep down, I'm like, are we really that upset if he said good for you? Let's say he said good for you and took a dig at a sport. What is it really? Why does it bother everyone so much?
Right, because I think being a soccer fan feels like you're at war with everyone else all the time.
But in 2024, if Kirk Herbstreit really believed that soccer was unpopular, everyone would question.
Right.
Dude, what do you be? He knows as much as the world.
How many Messi shirts do you need to see at your local supermarket?
How many Nashville games is he going to?
Right.
Follow what I'm saying? So that's where I was like, that's part of this chip on the shoulder where I'm like, sometimes it gets in our way.
If we can allow the English to continue talking about the sport when they pronounce it Martinez instead of Martinez, then we can allow Kirk Herbstreit.
Can we curse on this?
Please do.
Drives me insane. Yeah.
Martinez?
It'd be like, call me Zwellmann because I'm German. Yeah. Like, no, it's not. My name's Zwellmann.
Yeah.
The Pulisic pronunciation is driving me. Guys, we literally, his first national team camp, I grabbed this microphone, put it in his face, and I said, on camera, live, I said, say your name, please. Yeah. And we played it that game because Bob Lee was like, dude, we need to know exactly how you say it. He said it. I had broadcasters in England going, that's not how you say it. I'm like, it's his name.
My guy says it the way he wants it.
If Christian Pulisic says, I want you to call me Christian Smith, we will say in a broadcast, it's Christian Pulisic.
Yeah.
Oh, he wants to be called Christian Smith this game. It's his name.
Right.
It's not mine.
Look, when I was very young, hockey jerseys or sweaters, whatever they're called, were very popular, right? When I was very young. I didn't know anything about them, but they were very cool.
You act like you're 65 years old.
I'm 75 years old. thank you for saying I look younger. So they were cool, and I was like, who's that guy? Roy.
Oh,
and then someone looked at me and said, it's pronounced Wah. And I said, out of here. That's R-O and Y. And what came out of your mouth was W-A-H. And he said, he's French, Canadian. He's French.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, right, I'm going to call him Wah.
What was the best sweater you had?
I only had one. It was the Buffalo Sabres. Oh, no. And I had someone got me a New Jersey Devil one. And then
I'm a Devils fan.
It was red and green. It was red and green.
You had to have Brodeur.
But Marty Brodeur.
I mean, anyone else is not.
The Niedermeyer brothers also.
The Niedermeyers
Wasn't there a Lemieux guy, or was that the Rangers jersey?
Lemieux played the Penguins.
Mario Lemieux? Like,
bro, I don't know nothing about hockey. I know nothing about
hockey. So if I told you the best sweater I had, you wouldn't even know Pavel Bure. The Russian.
Oh, yeah, Pavel Bure. The Red Wings. Red Wings? No.
No. Stop.
Who am I thinking of?
Blues?
We can't have that.
Vancouver Canucks.
I'm thinking of
Vancouver Canucks.
Pavel Datsyuk.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Awesome.
Yeah. You know which one I wanted, though? The N with the hockey stick as the old Montreal team. That was
the
a dope
Quebec
logo.
Nordiques?
That was the dopest logo best, ever. Dude. Dopest logo
the best.
Ever. Outside of Hartford Whalers. That was a dope one.
That was really
why is this a hockey podcast?
Because
all
you brought up sweater. Yeah.
Hey, Taylor, get the puck out of here. All right. That's the name of the show, folks. Put it on a shirt.
In the basement.
In the basement. ESPN. Me with papers ruffling around. We were talking about soccer for a minute. What do you think of the amount of interest that's in the sport now? We were talking about how sometimes we got to let it go. Maybe some of the original fans are like, oh, everyone's just here for Messi. One of the wildest moments of being a soccer fan is being at the New York City FC Inter-Miami game with James Hand scores his first goal ever. It's the equalizer. And in that moment, I see people, a lot of people wearing pink Messi shirts cheering for New York City FC because they're Messi fans, but they're also New Yorkers.
But it's also New York.
Yeah, you're a New Yorker, so you kind of want to see your team still do well.
Me being the personal advisor driver, coffee. I literally follow Messi and Inter Miami wherever they go. The worst Messi away game was in New York. It was the New York Red Bulls. It was the only away game where the home team rooted for Messi.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Worst for the sake of the home team. Yeah, yeah.
I have been pleasantly surprised about this league at them booing Inter Miami.
How cool is that?
Yeah. I love it. They may have it. Their kids may have a pink jersey on.
Yeah.
For the record, my kids went to the Revolution Inter Miami game. They were not allowed to wear pink.
Nice.
And they couldn't wrap their heads around. They're 7 and 4. Yeah. They'll figure it out when they're older. But I'm like, you're not going to the game. And they're like, wait a minute, we're going to the game to see Messi. I go, I don't care. First off, I want to see number 2012 out there. It's all about me. But two, I was like, no, Gillette Stadium. When the Revs scored the first goal, it was insanely loud. And even Jake Zivin, time and time again, will look at me broadcasting a game. It's the away games have been the real highlight for me.
Really?
Because it still shows the growth of this league and saying, yeah, okay, you've got 65,000 at Gillette. But when the Revs scored, that was 55,000.
Yeah, that felt good, yeah.
Rooting for the Revs.
That didn't happen with Beckham, right?
It didn't. Because I mean, listen,
Because the Beckham show was more important than the game.
The game that ended my career was against David Beckham, the Galaxy, Gillette. It was 45,000 plus at Gillette Stadium. Yeah, when Beckham got announced, it felt like Messi, but it wasn't the same. There's real angst now in our league. There's real fandom. I hate saying it like that. Not saying back then there were no fans.
There's just more of it.
Yes, like Nashville Leagues Cup final was awesome.
Yeah.
They hated him. He scored arguably one of the best Messi goals I've ever seen.
It's ridiculous.
We just spoke to Dax about it earlier.
Well, Dax was wearing his jersey the entire game and afterwards too, by the way.
Jesus. I got to be honest. I would too. I'd be like, you do really good.
No way.
If he ran past me.
No way. You don't lose to.
I love it. I love it. Because he was literally just talking about how upset people were at him getting that jersey.
And I led the charge. Because, dude, if you're my teammate, no.
Yeah.
Piss off with that crap. Now,
what about in the locker room? Can you do it in the locker room?
Dude, you got the jersey. That's fine. But you're talking to the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Okay. I've told this story and I'll tell it again because maybe your viewers or listeners didn't hear it. We played in the Copa America against Argentina. Messi. It's 2007 in Venezuela. After the game, Verón wanted to change jerseys with me. We lost.
Yeah.
4-1. I was like, no, get
Juan Sebastián Verón, you said no.
No, this is even better.
Because I'm like, thank you for speaking to me, is what I would say.
So, like, two days, well, literally, first off, my entire job was to follow him around.
Yeah, right.
But we were winning 1-0. We had Eddie Johnson scored, and then they took over, whatever. They ended up winning the game. But that's just, no.
Yeah.
But I'm the wrong guy. There's a reason why. My contacts books is probably 12 people. I don't have friends.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It could be 14 by the end of this, but I'm not changing
no,
the shirt.
I'm not giving you
that's
but my point
good idea.
Is like, God, man, it's League's Cup final. You lost.
Yeah.
No, but that's me, the player, the ex-player. Like,
is there
I don't
any
care
player?
Who
is there any player
now, 10
in history?
Years from now, it's going to be the coolest thing ever.
In history.
No one's going to give a shit about it.
Back in the day, who was your favorite player growing up? Is there any player that you would have said, all right, I'll change shirts
no.
with you? No.
No, that's fact.
Wow.
I have Pelé's jersey from the Cosmos when my dad played against them. I have Canalla's jersey. Those are real relics.
Yeah.
I asked my dad, when did you get them? He said, the equipment manager went in the locker room and got them for me. Because my dad was one of the few Americans on the field, right? Back then, it was only 3 Americans per team. So that became – so I – ingrainedly, he told me, Man, you don't do that on the field. You don't. Now, you can do it on the field, all that. Social media now, I get it. It's different.
Yeah.
Right?
Different time.
But I know it's sounds like a wet blanket. I know the stories from it are unbelievable. But, man, I don't care who I played. If I lost the final, if I lost any game, I hated the world for about 24 hours. It's just how I was.
Yeah, it's fair.
But, like, Alan Shearer, Ruud van Nistelrooy were two favorite players growing up. Ruud van Nistelrooy, I worked with him at the World Cup the entire time. I'm like, I'm still, but then sure. I argued with him on our first show together.
Yeah. Well, you're still Taylor Twelman.
And Michael Pollock's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what he said is wrong. I disagree with it. Yeah. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Right? Nowadays, people would have been like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
I am an idiot, but at least.
I had a similar moment with my idol. We'll talk about it.
Who's your idol?
We'll talk about it after the show.
Stanley Cup Finals. It's Boston Bruins, St. Louis Blues.
Uh-huh.
The Boston fan has taught me what? No, you still got to be who you are.
Yeah,
so
right.
What do you do? I wear Blues to Game 7. That's what you do. Whether I'm friends with the Bruins players or it doesn't matter.
At the Boston Bruins Stadium.
At the Garden.
And you made it out?
And by the way, Blues won.
Yeah.
My point is, I also went to the World Series games where the Red Sox played the Cardinals, and I lost those. But I'm rooting. You got to be who you are. You got to be true. So my point is, if I'm Messi standing right across from me, and in that moment, I just lost 2-1. I don't give a flying, you know what?
Yeah.
I lost you. Get away from me.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I'm going to regret it and wish I had a great
game.
So be it.
Fair.
But that's
integrity.
Who I am.
Yeah,
that's
I like it.
It's just that's who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
fair.
Even
if, like,
for better or worse.
We even said before this, if Taylor has to fist fight some of the Yahoo producers, we'll be like, that's who he is. That's who he is.
First
just
off.
Stay down. That's who he is. Play dead. That's who he is. I have not talked about this. I'm glad you're laughing.
Yeah,
that's
our
all.
Audio guy has a very thick neck.
I don't
want to
get you in trouble.
We probably have to cut that out. There's a lot going to be cut out of this episode.
No, I actually think this is one of the best episodes I've ever done.
Well, Taylor Twelman.
The last time he does our show. Legally.
Not
legally.
At all. I'm so good.
We are wishing for another exciting 2025 MLS season. There's a lot going on, obviously, with League's Cup, but not also we're going to have the Club World Cup, the Gold Cup. This is going to be quite...
There's soccer piling on. It's insane.
The United States and just...
And then the World Cup.
And then the World
Cup. You know
what?
I want to ask you
this. It's like here, in the blink of an eye.
You've been a part of soccer for so long. What do you think the World Cup bounce is going to be like? With the amount of fandom that already exists, you've already talked about.
I don't know. It's hard to quantify it.
Is it hard to wrap your mind around it?
Yes, because I remember. I mean, 94 World Cup. I'm 14. Fine, but my father was vice president of Umbro North America. His sole purpose was to follow Brazil and take care of Brazil. So he did that. Went to their games. Then Major League Soccer starts in 96. My father. I'm an NASL baby. So. It was always about the sport of the future.
Yeah.
But then you start to see the numbers and real numbers. And then you're like, hang on a minute. It's not the sport of the future. It's literally here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's here. It's a different sport because it's mainly through streaming and different ways to consume your sport. I don't know how to quantify it. I don't. I think where Major League Soccer is set up to really grow is all of these fans can now see the infrastructure of the league.
Okay.
And what I mean by that, it's not Giant Stadium for the Metro Stars in 96.
Right.
It is legitimately, that's where City's going to be playing in 27.
Yeah.
That's where the Red Bulls play. You go to LA, this is where the Galaxy are. This is where LAFC are. Here's their academies. And that gives you credibility to the fan. There's a lot of fans of the world that still don't know enough about MLS.
That's true.
And they're going to be coming to this league in this country and all of a sudden see it and go, wait a minute, what? There's 30 teams?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where 94, you're like, all right, it's going to, let's hope it grows and starts. And it did. And now we're in our 30th year through a lot of peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to look like in 27. And especially if they do follow through and look at the schedule and change it to the way the Western Europe plays their schedule, guys, I don't know how to quantify that. And that's a genuine, legitimate answer to me because I don't think I can do it enough justice based on what happened in 94 to 96. I don't know what it's going to look like. Plus, it's the largest World Cup ever. That's the other thing that none of us have. We have no idea what's coming.
Yeah, literally the whole world is going to be in Canada, U.S., and Mexico. Right. It's crazy.
And yeah. I can't wait for those group stage games.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. Fiji versus Oceania.
8-1. The goal differential was plus 27. You're like...
It should be interesting, yeah. But no, there's a lot to look forward to. I mean, this feels like we're on the precipice of something
different,
something big, and yeah, we all hope to just kind of just enjoy this ride, man.
Maybe after the World Cup, I'll get my own room like you guys do for interviews. Maybe
we'll put
maybe.
In a good word for you.
Yeah, yeah, please do.
Okay, please do. Yeah, I think you need it.
Taylor Twellman, thank you so best. Much, brother. Shout out to Taylor Twellman. Be on the lookout. We have a bunch of other MLS interviews coming soon with a bunch of other players. You know, Fafa Pico is Keaton Parks of NYCFC. We had a couple coaches that we spoke to out in Miami as well. So they're a lot of fun. So yeah, make sure you subscribe to the Cooligans podcast if you have not yet to be on. So you can be on the lookout for those. All right. Let's wrap up some of the other Premier League matches that we have to discuss because there was a lot of other interesting stories. And Everton Football Club, bro. Apologies to our producer for the day, Andrew, Tottenham supporter. our normal producer, Carter Singh, another Tottenham fan. I don't know what Yahoo does. Yahoo's like, we're only assigning Tottenham producers to you. And this is a very, it seems intentional. It seems almost sinister when you think about it. But the Everton wins 3-2 against Tottenham. They're up 3-0 in the first half. I did a watch along with a buddy of mine. Shout out to Jordan Scott Huggins, another comedian out in Raleigh, North Carolina. And like I said, when I meet another comedian that also likes Everton, bro, I think I'm like, how are we not married? How are we not a couple? There are so few of us that we have to bond. I'm like, I'm leaving my wife because this, I'm never going to find a deeper connection than this, sir.
Christian, I got a stat for you and I want you to react to it. All right?
Go for it.
David Moyes is the first Everton manager since David Moyes to beat Spurs at home in the league.
I did see this. And when I read that, there was a single tear that dropped down my cheek because that is, I've been supporting Everton since 2015. And in my mind, they haven't been that bad. Like, I mean, it's been not great. We fighting relegation here and there, but we end up staying up and we beat teams here and there. And, you know, I remember when we beat Manchester City in like 2017, that was a lovely moment. But when you read stats like that, it's just like, how have they been this bad? I mean, you get to play them twice a year for 12 years. You think you would, at home especially, you would beat them once. But no, David Moyes was the last manager to beat Everton at home in his first stint with the club.
Christian, I've known you for a while. This is the first time I've seen the whites of your eyes that much. Like, there's a lot coming out just now.
That's right, bro. I mean, it's interesting because I love, you know, your passion for Manchester United is something that is... I know you've talked about it a lot as you know, sometimes the fans in Manchester could be critical of you and they don't think it's like it's genuine. You didn't grow up here and blah, blah, blah. And when I, you know, if anybody meets you in person or talks to you, they're like, there's nothing phony about Good Vibes John with his. I mean, it's almost like it's like a psychosis. I mean, then not only do they know it's not phony, but they're like, "Yo, is he okay?" Like, I'm a little worried. But there's something. Everton are, you know, is a club in a completely a different universe than Manchester United when it comes to club expectations. But
you still have your expectations, Christian, as a fan.
100%. And yeah. And like what Everton have been doing the last few years is just, it's frustrating, but I have to be honest that, yes, we are like battling and fighting relegation and it's all frustrating, but the good moments feel like heroin, bro. They're like, yes, we've been so bad. So it makes it so like supporting the club is not that bad, because it's like the highs, the lows are so low that even a little bit of success feels like, oh my God, it hit into my veins. I'm addicted to this.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but that don't sound too healthy, if I'm being honest. You waiting for that that hit?
No, bro, there's nothing healthy about it. I'm selling my stuff on the street to try to get Everton to victories. It is not good. So that's why it's like I can sort of justify it, but those three goals. And if you saw the highlights, you saw the goal. They weren't just like the third one was an own goal. So it's nice to have a little bit of luck, because Everton have not. I mean, we did a watch along, Manchester United Everton, and we got absolutely smacked 4-0, which is like, I didn't think that. I even said before the game, I'm like, right, nah, bro, like defensively, we are all right. We're not even gonna be like giving up goals like that. I mean, you might win 1-0, 2-0, like whatever, but we're not. Why, we think we're going to get embarrassed out here? We're Everton Football Club. And no, that's exactly what happened. So the goals that were scored, the first goal from Dominic Calvert-Lewin, I'm like, what is this? I thought it was Eden Hazard-Lewin, bro. Who is this guy? Cutting up three defenders. There were, who was, it was Archie Gray. It was, what's his name? The other dude.
Bergvall?
No, not Bergvall. The guy came back from injury. Davies. Ben Davies.
Ben Davies.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin was dribbling in the box, back, like, just croquetas, back and forth. There's a moment, if you're watching the replay from behind the goal, Ben Davies is literally has his neck turned back. He's looking at the crowd in the stand. And he's like, is the ball over there? Where is the ball? Completely lost. And right. And I love that. And no matter what player does something like that, that's amazing. A lovely highlight. Put it on a poster. But the fact that it was Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who hasn't scored in 16 games or something like that. And for an Everton player to do that, it literally blows my mind. I'm like, was it simply that we couldn't, was it Sean Dyche holding everybody back? Like, what? Where was this kind of like expression? So that goal, and then the second goal from Ndiaye, which is what, bro? We don't. It was an and-one mixtape out there. Where? That's the kind of thing I'm like, why can't we just have that a little bit from time to time? Like, the players are good enough to do it. Why can't they be set up? So, look, bringing David Moyes in, I think it, you know, I don't know if this is his exact philosophy, but I saw, shout out to Scuffed Podcast, which is like a USMNT podcast, Tim Ream, and I saw a quote that they had posted, that Tim Ream was talking about the difference between Greg Berhalter and Mauricio Pochettino. And he gave a specific detail where he said that Pochettino is a breath of fresh air, because he's not telling us pass here, pass here, pass here, pass here, like the specifics of how to construct and build out and stuff like that. He's saying kind of like, be yourself, do what you think is best in this moment. Like, I'm going to put you in a position, but you're the one that has to artistically sort and creatively decide kind of what happens. And maybe that's the first thing I thought of when I saw Calvert-Lewin score that goal. I'm like, maybe it's as simple as just a manager being like, no, we're not. It's not about, hey, go here, go here, go here, and be all super technical. Just like kind of be yourself and trust your instincts.
Yeah, but I think it's more about the balance of how that is implemented, right? Because you can have players, like, for example, just to kind of relate on a personal note, if we're looking about Manchester United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was all about the vibes. We give you the trust. Yeah. We give you the faith. Go do it. You know what I'm saying? And for a moment, we looked fantastic. The spark that looked like ignited something back into us. And then all of a sudden, once those games started going, where now you need a little bit more tactical discipline. Now you need to listen to the manager where he says, okay, this is how we're going to build the shapes. These are the passing transitions. You look for the angles. You make the runs. When those things start missing and the opposition starts figuring those out, because there's going to be enough data at that point for opposition teams to go, okay, this is how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's team looks. This is how David Moyes' team's going to look. You're going to get caught out. For me right now, watching that game against Spurs, I think there was a part of Spurs that just looked lost. They looked lost on top of Everton just needing somebody to just beat up. You know what I mean? They've been getting beaten up. All they're like, you know what? I'm pulling my sleeves up, and this was that game.
Yeah, it felt it felt great to see it. There is a little bit of concern. I thought the from Tottenham's perspective, I thought the lineup was a little bit like they're not, this Everton, we don't really got to worry about them that much. And a huge mistake. I mean, I think Son started as a striker, which is all right. I mean, no, that's not what he does. I mean, he's a great player. But starting him at the nine, and look, they have injuries, and not taking away. That. Tottenham are in a nightmare situation with injuries.
Right.
But I think that's, and he had the opportunity to tie it up 1-1 and miss, just hit a shot right to Pickford. But I think there was a little bit of underestimating what Everton were kind of like capable of. But, it begs a bigger question because, they did score those two goals. And it did, I was getting nervous. I'm like, Everton brought on three defenders in the second half and gave up two goals after all the defenders came on. And it's just like, what? It's just like, logically, how is that even like possible? And then you understand, like, Everton doesn't have, there are very few games that even with Sean Dyche that he ever made five substitutions. Because you make five substitutions, that's five risks you are taking.
That's too much woke nonsense.
Yeah, exactly, bro. You're taking too many chances at giving up a game, and that's what this game felt like. Michael Keane, the center back, came into the game. They get rid of an attacker, bring in a center back, and the center back is the one watching the ball go over him while Richarlison scores. And it's just like, bro, I understand why you're benched. This is crazy. Like, you're a center back that cannot defend. And doesn't have, maybe it's like not having game time, maybe just not being mentally kind of prepared or whatever, but it's just so frustrating to be in those situations. When you have a 3-goal lead, and while we were streaming, I'm like, yo, Everton need a clean sheet to build their confidence, and boom, that's it, 2 goals right off the bat. But Tottenham, they score the 2 goals, and I think it puts, it sort of quiets down the conversations about Ange, because it's like, well, they were coming back. Like, anything could have happened. But it's just like, how are you going down 3 goals against Everton? Like, there's almost no real excuse.
If you look at Ange and the way that he's been setting up his teams, especially since last season, like, last season he was sort of lauded as this, like, he's going for it. He believes in his tactics. If he wants to attack, he's going to attack, mate. You know what I'm saying? The Australian vibes. He's attacking, but you're looking at it now. You go, oh, maybe managers can't be playing like that. Maybe they need to be a bit more flexible. And you see, of course, we're going to talk about the injuries. And yes, the injuries are playing a huge part. But he doesn't look tactically flexible from my perspective in that regard. And I think he needs to be able to adjust. And it's so hard for me to say that because United, we experienced the worst injury. I've never experienced like that in something in my life where people just pulling out, they're just dropping. When you say that word and then the disc flies out and you go, and then you break the disc.
And
that was what was happening United. They just, one guy, like Bruno Fernandes, Lisandro Martinez, like United players were getting dropped like crazy. And Spurs are experiencing something like that. So I do understand their trouble and the pain, but you need to have a bit more flexibility. And I think Ange Postecoglou, respectfully, I don't really see that much from him.
What about Son? I mean, I know, I love Heung-min Son. I think most fans do, even if you're not a Spurs supporter. I think for just what he represents to the Asian community, to the Korean community. But there's something where maybe the last like year and a half, 2 years, he doesn't seem like the same player. And maybe it's just age, but he's not really giving us those moments that we're kind of used to seeing. I wonder if his time is closer to the end for him being at Tottenham. Maybe he could use a change of scenery. I don't know. What do you think?
100%. And it's a sad thing to see somebody that I've loved and adored and watched throughout his entire career. But you know, Father Time waits for nobody, and you can clearly see that his legs are slowly sort of waning a bit. And you know, we mentioned before, Sonny, he's always best when operated down the left-hand side with that electric pace and his decision-making. He's got that killer instinct. This season, he, on top of the fact that he doesn't have the legs, he operated at the nine previously before. It's not like it's his first stint, but he's just having to do too much. On top of the fact that his physical attributes aren't as popping off as they used to be. So I think it's just all of these problems piling one on. At that point, when you're a big team, you manage those talents better, right? Maybe if he's training four times a week, you maybe take him off for one or two, you know, or you bring him on for a certain game. You tell him, hey, I'm going to rest you for X, Y, and Z. Get ready for the next set because they need to manage a bit better. I don't think Spurs, A, have the luxury of doing that because of the injuries, and B, they don't have the squad depth, period. You know what I mean? Like, look, with all due respect, Richarlison ain't Harry Kane, and with all due respect, that team just lacks depth all across the board. And I think Sonny is, in some ways, a target for some of the more angrier sections of the Spurs fan base who feel like he should be doing more because he did it seasons ago.
Yeah, I think and that it's a fair point about Harry Kane. I mean, he isn't Harry Kane, but he's also not Son without Harry Kane there, right? Like, you see how beneficial having Kane was to his game. And he just seems a little bit, you know, loss is not the exact word, but like he is kind of like overcompensating. And with you know, Solanke is not the same player that Harry Kane is, obviously, because Harry Kane obviously was a lethal scorer, but really a fair amount of assists every season when he was at Tottenham. And that is not really part of Solanke's game. So, dude, yeah, as an Everton fan, happy to be in that position. Look, Everton are in 16th place. The team above them is in 15th, which is Tottenham, which is like, it's just like, bro, I didn't. It's one of those things like, oh, yo, I didn't expect to see you here. okay. You know, when you see somebody, you're like, oh, you're hanging out with the peasants. You know what I mean?
this is where I have to tone down because I want to do the comedian thing again, right? Because I know Alexis will bounce back at you with something funny too. But I'm going to stop because it's going to start getting crickety. So I'm just going okay. to laugh and just...
Because, yeah, soon enough, you know, Manchester United will be like, hey, I didn't know they let you in. So the other thing with Tottenham related, a few people were commenting about this because we didn't get a chance to talk about it last week. But there was an advertisement. There was a Google Pixel commercial that was making a lot of noise because it starred Sol Campbell. If you don't, for the people who are not aware of Sol Campbell, Sol Campbell is a Tottenham player that, to my knowledge, he might be the only one, I don't know. He made the switch from Tottenham to Arsenal. And he, and again, I don't know if anybody else has ever done this, but the ad itself is, it's a Google Pixel ad, and it's like, you can already sort of start to see it. It's, you know, make the switch and blah, blah, blah. And it's really kind of a dig at, you know, people who have iPhones and just be like, hey, but if you haven't seen this advertisement, go check it out. Mainly because it's just the copy in it, the script is just so well done and subtle, just the subtle, like, you know, every single detail. He starts with a white sweater and then he takes it off and it's a red sweater. And he's just talking about like, you know, make the switch. You know, I'm someone like me really, you know, is an expert in these kind of things. But I wonder that, you know, there isn't this is, you know, there. I mean, there's been a few United and City players. But I can't think of anybody that has leaned into it, especially being a part of advertisement, stuff like that. This is not something that players really lean into because you know somebody's going to be upset. You're going to get a bunch of angry comments. Sol Campbell is like he didn't do this. He didn't make the change in the social media age. I mean, I think it was like MySpace that was maybe like popular at the time. I forgot what year he moved. But this is something that most players kind of avoid. They don't really want to talk about. So what do you think about Sol Campbell leaning into this, making a joke about it, even though you know people are going to be upset?
Well, I think he left in 2001, 2000.
Okay,
maybe.
Yeah. So, yeah, way before.
I don't know even MySpace. Maybe Zanga. Shout out Zanga. No.
Friendster? I don't know what was in.
No, there was definitely, I think, Emmanuel Adebayor, David Bentley, I think two names that come to mind as well to make those changes. But the difference between them and Sol Campbell is that, for example, if we're just maybe speaking about Adebayor, for instance, he didn't care. He doesn't give a damn about anybody.
Right.
And that's why Spurs fans also don't care. If you don't care, I don't care. That's the energy. But Sol Campbell cares a lot because he seems like he feels mistreated and unfairly treated by Spurs fans. But conversely speaking, you know, I hear Expressions talking about him a lot. You know, Expressions is like, you know, he said, like, his quote this week was like, Spurs fan with dementia will never forget what Sol Campbell did. Blood. You know, like he's like said something like that, and
yeah.
They feel that hatred. You know, they feel that resentment towards somebody like that more because Sol Campbell, I think, sometimes brings it up to say, hey, like, you know, I left. You know, Spurs fans don't like me. Why do I want to? You know, when he says stuff like that.
My favorite part of the commercial, I'm just like watching it back right now. He says, you know, basically like encouraging the move, like make the, he goes, big moves pay off. And then he dusts his trophy cabinet and dusts off all his like plaudits and awards. And it's just, I mean, this is a little bit of like, you know, he agreed to do this because he's dealt with so much abuse from Tottenham fans. He's
absolutely.
Just like, I'm gonna spit in your face with because of everything that I've had to deal with, and I think this is an iconic moment in the rivalry. This is part of the North London Derby. You know what I mean? This might as well be this is Henri, the Henri slide and the statue and everything. This is like just as significant. So I love that this is just in this era, in this modern age, like the banter isn't just on the pitch. And now even Google is being a part of it. And Sol Campbell doing this is like really, really hilarious. So
see now, how perfect would it be if it was the opposite, where they could play that Uno reverse card where they had somebody that they brought from Arsenal and they could call up Samsung or Apple to be like, yo, let's get them back.
That's
North London Derby, but who can they really do? Who can they really hire for that? You know,
right. It's a little difficult. I mean, they have to find a way to get back. I would love to see the banter continue.
Absolutely,
but impressive nonetheless. All right, we mentioned Arsenal. Let's talk about Arsenal real quick because they had a 2 goal lead. Who did they play? They played Aston Villa, and They squandered the lead. Obviously, I think the biggest talking point in this game was Kai Havertz and the handball. He says, "Nah, bro, that was my midriff. That was my navel. That was just my tummy."
Hashtag anatomy. Damn.
Okay, that was everything but my arm. What are you seeing, ref? This game. I mean, and then it's interesting because Mikel Merino is the one who took the shot and deflects off Kai Havertz, and Merino. Havertz is celebrating. He's like, yes, 3-2. Let's go. We're catching up to Liverpool. And Marina, you see him walking and he's like casually going to the corner flag where all the players are celebrating. But when, you know, the camera is on Marino and you see it and you're like, why isn't he happy? He doesn't seem very happy. Because my man knew that Kai Havertz ruined it. And look, it's not Kai Havertz's fault, but he's done this before. Did you remember the one at Chelsea where it bounced off the keeper and my man like straight up Heisman the damn ball into the goal and he's celebrating like, yeah, I did it. I'm him, pointing at, you know, the name on the back of his jersey. Like, what, yo, this is not a goal. This don't count. But I don't know if you saw the replays, but it was kind of deceptive because I thought when I first saw it, I'm like, that hit his stomach. I don't even understand why it's even a thing. Why is VAR getting involved? But when you look at it slowly, it's interesting because when you look at it from behind the goal, it looks like it hit his stomach. When you look at it from behind the other goal, from David Raya's goal in that camera, it clearly hits his right forearm and goes in. And it's like kind of goofy for Kai Havertz to know that and be celebrating. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he thought he'd get away with it, but it's
absolutely. I saw the undulation. Is that the right word? The wave and the skin right. on his arm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, and yeah, Arsenal yeah. fans were like, "Oh, like even Ollie Watkins said he feels bad." No, it hit his arm. Like, we're like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? And VAR was there.
Yeah, a bummer for Arsenal and Arsenal fans. Like, just to close that gap with Liverpool, a Liverpool team that I thought was going to be dropping points. And then Darwin Nunez, of all people, who, you know, fans can't stop disliking because they expect much more from him, scores two goals in stoppage time for Liverpool. All right, let's wrap up there. John, let people know where they can follow you, where they can capture and see all the Manchester United content and information and passion that you always deliver.
I was going to say, you know, you guys can come find me only on Instagram, YouTube, not TikTok, because TikTok done now. And then actually, no, let's bring that back.
Yeah,
so you can find me everywhere at Good Vibes John.
Okay, yeah, go check. And the watch alongs and the live streams are always great. There's a bunch of stuff on YouTube as well. And I love seeing you do a lot of work with, like, was it Full Time Devils, I believe?
Yeah, Strefford Paddock, yeah.
Strefford Paddock and all those guys, yeah. And I love that they, you know, embrace you as one of their own as well, because you when it comes to Manchester United, you are usually my go-to source. You know, it's you and Goldbridge when I want to see the inverse of the oh, of God. Okay, when I want to be entertained by someone being upset, that's where I go. Okay, I'm no better than any other just casual TikTok user. I'm like, what was the Goldbridge reacts? So I could see, especially when they lose. This is what I love. I don't know if you saw when Expressions, he was live streaming once, and Tottenham got scored on, and his view count jumped like 12,000.
Yeah.
And he was like, he's like, F all of you. Get out of here. You don't belong in here. He's telling all his thousands of viewers to get out because they want to see him suffer. So that's Goldbridge for me, bro. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Alexis will be back on Thursday. But as always, make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans everywhere. Follow us on Blue Sky. We're doing a lot of stuff there. SoccerCooligans.com on Blue Sky. And yeah, everything else. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't yet. It's grossly irresponsible if you haven't yet. I take it as a personal attack on me and my family if you do not hit that subscribe button. And just know that you're making my son cry if you do not hit that subscribe button. And that's so I'm just putting that on you. You don't want Damn. That. You don't want that in your life. So if you don't like,
I'm gonna try that on my channel. I'm gonna try that.
If you don't want to see you make a baby cry, hit that subscribe button.
Oh, jeez.
So, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Y'all the absolute best. Good vibes, John. I appreciate you, bro. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, everybody.